This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. We're here on Saturdays talking about the disease of addiction and the road to recovery. It's all sponsored by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, about which more in just a little bit. Well, you know, if you're watching any television at all, you've heard that guy, it's usually Andy Williams or Perry Como or somebody, tell us endlessly that it's the most wonderful time of the year. And it's true. The holidays can be all of that. If, on the other hand, you are in recovery for a substance abuse problem, the holidays can be problematic. And that's what we do. We've done this show every year at this time for the past several years because it is instructive and important to let people in recovery or trying to get their lives back together and their families understand that while, yeah, it's a great time of the year, but it is filled with potential landmines or barriers or problems that you have to take into account when you're committed to a sober lifestyle. So to that end, we reach out to the experts here at Retreat to find out what they know about navigating the most wonderful time of the year, the holidays. To that end, we welcome a couple of pals of the show. Certainly Maggie Hunt's no stranger to people who've heard this program. Maggie is Director of Alumni Services for Retreat. She's been with us many, many times. She's a great supporter of the program. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
And Maggie has with her colleague, Grace Schober. Grace is, what, your second time now on the program, right? You're here with your dad?
Yep, that's
about
right.
Maybe a year ago or so?
Yep.
Yeah. Grace is in the intake department of the program. We'll find out exactly what that's all about straight ahead. So navigating the holidays in recovery is the topic on Recovery Radio for today. Have I overstated this at all, Maggie? I mean, is this just another couple of weeks in the life of somebody in recovery, or is it a unique time of the year?
Yeah, I think it's a unique time of year. There's definitely a lot of feelings associated with it for people who are in early sobriety. There's a lot of walking on eggshells that happens with however many years people are sober. So, I think it's definitely an interesting time of year for sure.
Grace, you agree?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, again, you want to be vigilant all year long, but this is the time of year where it seems to be the most difficult.
It's difficult for all of us. I mean, Christmas raises the stress level. Even in the pursuit of making it wonderful, it can raise everybody's stress level. So we all have some familiarity with this. And I guess, tell me if I'm wrong, stress is one of the things you really got to try to, if not avoid completely, manage when you're in early recovery.
Yeah. I think especially with this time of year, wanting to make the money to get the gifts and get everything together, I think that taking one thing at a time and not becoming overwhelmed with the stress is critical.
Yeah. Do people need a plan, an actual plan of action when confronting the holidays? Grace, what do you think?
Yeah, I think they need a pretty solid plan before being around family, going back home to their old environment maybe. So there's like a lot that is entailed to make the holiday successful for you and for your family.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that we hear so very often about recovery is the people, places, and things notion that people in recovery are urged to change those three things. And you really can't do that during the holidays, right?
Yeah, and no. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. I think that knowing that you have a plan would definitely help when you go in. Like, if you know that somebody in your family, like, uses substances and they're going to try to talk to you, you should probably try to maybe, like, you know, just greet them and keep it moving, not get too caught up in the conversation.
Well, the holiday shouldn't be about the person in recovery, should it? Or, overtly.
No, I think that, you know, families have their own traditions, and because of, you know, one person who may be in recovery, the whole entire tradition doesn't have to change. But I think for a family member to try and be a little bit more sensitive to the fact that somebody is, you know, struggling or newly sober, that's something that they need to take into consideration.
You know, I've talked to so many people in active recovery, long-term active recovery, and they reach a point where they suggest, no, it doesn't make any difference to me whether other people drink around me. I'm okay with that. I don't have to avoid that. But in early recovery, during the holidays, when imbibing is so much a part of it, is it wise for families to go, you know what, maybe we won't have a bunch of bottles of wine on the table at dinner? Is that a good idea? Or?
Yeah, especially for people who are early in sobriety. I mean, I think that when you stop whatever you're doing and ask them, it makes it more uncomfortable for the individual because obviously they want you to like drink and have fun. They know that like they can't really do that successfully. So if you make the choice, if you're having people over who you know who are new in sobriety, like just probably just keep it kind of low key. I know for myself around the holidays, a big conversation is usually like, well, you struggle with some substances. So like you can drink. It's totally fine. So I would go to different events and people would be like, what are you drinking? And I'd be like, I'll just have a soda, you know, because it doesn't just stop for me for one drink like it would for somebody else.
Yeah. One of the things that has been changing, and maybe not fast enough, I've seen it anyway, is that folks, when confronted with somebody in a drinking situation, in a social drinking situation, if someone says, no, thank you, or give me a club soda, my experience is that people don't push that unless they're really kind of dopey. Do you know what I mean? Do you find that they go, oh, come on, it's Christmas. Does that still go on? It does, doesn't it?
I think that still does go on. Yeah. I mean, I think it's maybe gotten better as, you know, it's been more out there about addiction and recovery and things like that. But I think there are still some people, and definitely there are still going to be family members that do those types of things.
Yeah. You know what? It's so ingrained in us that, you know, you're supposed to welcome somebody in and it's automatic that, come on, the eggnog's not that spiked. But I do find that people are a little more sensitive. Maybe it's because I've been doing this now and hearing the stories for so long. But when someone says – when someone passes in a drinking environment, like, you know, I almost automatically assume they're in recovery. I don't even question it because the idea of someone not drinking is so foreign in our culture, particularly at the holidays. What else do families need to be mindful of? I'm guessing that there's another big component in that situation is the feelings, the emotions that are triggered when you're coming back into the family sober. Family's got to get over all that other stuff, right? The anger and the resentment and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me that almost as important as not having maybe a bunch of alcohol around is also the feelings that people have. So like, you know, you stole from maybe the person that's sitting right next to you and now you have to sit next to them and kind of face that and you're sober. So feelings just are just almost as lethal to an addict or an alcoholic as the actual substance sitting right in front of you.
What about the work environment? When the Christmas parties at work now can often involve alcohol, though that's changing as well too. How should people in early recovery deal with that, particularly if it's not widely known that they're in recovery? What kind of advice would you give somebody in that situation?
I mean, I would tell them that they could either A, get a club soda, or B, they could just say like, oh, I'm driving, I can't drink, or oh, I don't feel good, I'm not drinking. You know, if they don't want to disclose that they're in recovery, that's totally fine. But they definitely can say, I don't feel well, my stomach hurts, I'm just not in the mood. Or, I mean, really, they can just say, I'm just not drinking. And like, I think that that's another big topic to talk about too, is just people should be proud that they're sober. Like especially like as an employee of a company, like I'm happy that somebody's not going to be drinking because like then I know that they're probably more efficient in their job. You know what I mean? Like they're not going to fall asleep or like, you know, I won't have any liability issues because they're not going to get in a car accident on the way home. So.
Yeah. Well, when that attitude becomes more ingrained in the population, then I think it'll make recovery a lot, I wouldn't say easier, but certainly less bumpy for people because you're right. There is still this lingering. You're not drinking, as though there's something wrong with that, with abstaining from drinking. What about I've read a little bit about some of the suggestions on how people should approach stuff like office parties and not so much family gatherings, but office parties. Is it wise to go to these parties alone, or should you go with somebody?
I would say that you should go with somebody if you choose not to opt out altogether, because you can do that in early recovery. You can say you have another event to go to if that's what's safest for you. But if you can bring somebody with you, bring a sober support system, I think that's wise.
Yeah, or, and even if you can't, like what Grace said, like having people that you can call who will answer the phone as soon as you call, and then like you can kind of step away for 5 minutes, get grounded, you know, feel a little bit closer to, you know, your own community that you're building for yourself, and just like take a little time out. That I mean, if you can't bring somebody, that would be the next best option, as well as like going to a meeting or doing whatever self-care, you know, you're doing to stay sober. Do that right before you go, and then right after you go.
Is it also wise to be honest about people that you really should avoid, even in a social situation? This guy's going to be there. She's going to be there. Is it wise to know who those people are that you might have a problem with?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And like Maggie said earlier, if there's somebody that you know is going to trigger something in you, maybe, or maybe it's just somebody you used to drink with, you have these, you know, this past with this person. Yeah, I think that you need to say hello and then move on and go to somebody else and not spend a lot of time with them.
Well, what's interesting about that is that it sounds like a lot of heavy lifting and all that, but it's just being mindful that, you know, you can't just blithely go to this party, this office party or this gang that's gathering after work, and not expect that you're going to run into a couple of problems there. So you have to be very mindful going in, right?
Yeah, and I was just thinking when you were saying that, like, it's okay for you to not go to certain events in early sobriety. And as a family member of somebody who's newly sober, if somebody says that they don't want to come, you know, don't harass them. Let them, you know, there's a million, you know, holidays every year. If they just want to sit this one out, you know, like, because they want to go to a meeting or whatever, just allow them to. It's okay that they need to not be around alcohol for this first holiday.
It's often a relief, too, I would guess, to those people going, oh, good. Maybe they shouldn't be here. Maggie Hunt and Grace Schober are with us. They are with Retreat, and they're talking with us about navigating the holidays while in recovery. This is Recovery Radio. We have more. Don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano with you. We're talking about the making our way through the holidays. And by the way, we all have to do that. We all have to make our way through this terrific holiday season. If you're in recovery, you cannot do it haphazardly. You've got to be very mindful about it and understand that there are tripwires out there to be avoided. So that's been the topic, navigating the holidays while in recovery. Maggie Hunt and Grace Schober are with us. They both know about sobriety. They're both in long-term sobriety themselves. We're going to find out a little bit more about that later. But they're here in their role as experts in this field, as employees of Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. So, guys, a couple of the other things to talk about. We know what triggers are. These are things that might cause a relapse. Incidentally, do we know, do you guys know whether there is a higher relapse rate during the holidays? Do we know about that?
Well, I heard that December is the most lethal month for people who struggle with substance abuse, but I didn't get numbers or anything like that. But it makes sense.
And that would have as much to do with the fact that everybody's celebrating and drinking, as much to do with that as it does to the emotions it brings up, right?
Absolutely.
It's incredibly, as we always say, it's a stressful time of the year. Families are hard to be with sober. They're hard to be with sober. I mean, you know, somebody once said that you ask them why they drink at all, and they say, I drink to make other people more interesting, which I always thought made a certain amount of sense. So what do you do? Triggers are those things that, as I say, can cause a problem. Is it wise, particularly in early recovery, to really write down that stuff, to make a list of things that might trigger a relapse?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you're early in sobriety, it might be something that's helpful. For me, writing them down wasn't really helpful, because a lot of like the triggers were internal, like, you know, when I opened my eyes or like when I did anything. So I didn't have like small
Tuesday was a trigger, right?
Yeah, right? So I didn't really have anything that, you know, I didn't have any significant trauma, you know, I didn't have any, you know, natural disaster, you know, nothing really to trigger me, so to speak. I mean, the only thing really that would probably trigger me would be thinking that I could drink and not and just not use drugs. That's probably the biggest one around the holidays for me. Yeah. Only because my family still, you know, they a lot. Some of them are not alcoholics, so they can successfully drink and they enjoy successfully drinking and they're fine.
Yeah. Grace, how about you? Do you think writing stuff down? What's your experience with that? Did that help, or did you even try that?
Yeah, I mean, I used to write stuff down, not only like what to avoid, but also like what I was grateful for, which helped me avoid things that I should avoid. But
And that's interesting. Rather than a negative list of these are the bad things, you just remember the good things.
Right, exactly. Like, what am I actually staying sober for? And then you look at your list and you're like, this is what I'm actually staying sober for, because you do need that reminder. Again, in personal preference and early sobriety. But just going back to the basics, the people, places, and things. I mean, those were triggers for me. So, like, if I – something to avoid would be – we talked about this the other day – is, oh – you know, we're going to go to this bar, or I have friends going to a bar. I'm just going to go and just like hang out and like just see how it is inside. Like, that's something you shouldn't do. It's just not a good idea.
What don't you mean just because it's a bad environment to be in?
I mean, it's a bar. So like, if you go into a bar, your intentions are going to be to drink, whether they're at the forefront of your mind or not. So if you say to yourself, I'm going to go to this bar and just get something to eat, well, you can go get something to eat at a place that's not a bar. You know, so it's something to avoid. Absolutely.
What about families? How much planning should they do? I mean, I would guess a lot of families early on here just sort of hold their breath and cross their fingers during the holidays. But should they do a little more than that, Maggie?
I mean, I would say that if they wanted to keep the drinking to a low key, you know, like instead of having like vodka and whiskey, maybe just have beer and wine. I mean, I don't know if that would make anything different, but I mean, for some people, it might.
What about the things that are spoken about? This is not a good time to air the grievances. This is not Festivus. This is
Yeah. I mean, maybe. I mean, well, I think that maybe not bringing up all the terrible things that they did over the dinner table. That might not be a good, you know, topic of conversation.
Or even carry an attitude about it. You guys have experienced this, where people are kind of on eggshells around you and are overly solicitous, or, and this is something I really want to get your opinions on, automatically assume that you'll be the designated driver after the party. Because after all, you're not going to drink. I've read that's probably not a great idea to be the designated driver. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I want to, on the that one point that you were talking about, is like, you know, bringing up past things. Like, I'm sitting there in early sobriety and I know what I've done. It's just like exactly what Maggie said, not the right place to say it, not the right time. Do it next week, do it the week after, you know, just to like, or like do it in small doses, but definitely not like at the dinner table for sure.
Well, you know, and you know what else occurs to me now, and tell me if you think I'm right here. It's also not a great time for somebody in early recovery to begin to apologize, right? Or right? Is that it?
Yeah. No. I mean,
remember that time I died?
Yeah. Right. No. When you're talking about like actually making amends for an individual who's in recovery, it would be selfish almost to do it at that spot, because if you're trying to make amends, you're not just trying to say you're sorry. You're trying to like actually mend the relationship and do something different. So bringing it up and doing it at that time like probably wouldn't be the most appropriate. But I was thinking about the when being a designated driver. I have been a designated driver for people around the holidays. And I think that your point of being the last at the party, that's not – that like that would not be a good decision. But when I have been the designated driver for family members, I'm like, thank God I'm sober.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Because it – for somebody who actually – it is – first of all, it's a little embarrassing sometimes for the individual, and I'm just like so grateful.
Oh, so we can work both ways, because I, you know, from an outsider's perspective, you would go, the last place you want to be in recovery is driving a bunch of drunks in the back of your car. But you're right. I guess it's like, wow.
Yeah. Thank God that's not me right
I'm
now.
Not there anymore. So anyway, when we come back, we will get some up close and personal experiences with the holidays in recovery with our guests. That's what we're talking about, navigating through the minefield of the most wonderful time of the year. This is Recovery Radio. Don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martireno. I'm the host of this thing, and it is sponsored by Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, locations in the Lancaster area, in Ephrata and Akron, and also a facility, a gigantic brand-new facility in West Palm Beach, Florida. I could go on at length about how well-respected they are as a treatment facility, but you can look that up yourself. Their reputation speaks for itself. They are among the leaders. They've helped lots and lots of people. But Peter Shore, who's the founder of Retreat, sort of bought into this program on the following premise. This is not an infomercial. We're not here every week to tell you that the only way you're going to get sober is through Retreat. Have they helped lots of people? Sure. There's all kinds of roads to recovery. What you need is to be armed with good information. And Peter said, why don't you do that on the show? Just tell people what we think they need to know and see if they can get themselves back together again. I'm going to give you Retreat's phone number. I say this every week. This is a great resource if the disease of addiction visits you or your family. No one's ever prepared for it. They never see it coming, and they have to make tough decisions under extraordinarily difficult circumstances. Where do you turn? Can only Google so much. I'll give you their phone number. Use it as an informational tool. Someone will answer the phone at Retreat, and they will answer your questions no matter what they are. Here's something else I always say. I'll give you the phone number, and I hope, and I know Peter does, you never have to use it. But it could make a lot of difference. Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, 855-859-8808. Any questions about anything you've heard on the program or anything about your struggles? Any questions at all, they will answer them for you. 855-859-8808, Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. From their Alumni Services Department, the director of the Alumni Services Department, Maggie Hunt is with us, and her colleague, Grace Schoberg. Grace is in the intake department there. Grace, before we go into some of the specifics of your memories, intake, you're among the first people that folks see when they come to treatment?
Yep, that's right. As soon as they come through the door, we're there to greet them and kind of let them know about what they're going to be experiencing and getting a lot of information from them and stuff like that.
And Maggie, people ought to know by now if they've heard the program more than once that you do great work with the relatively new adjunct here, and that's the alumni group. Real quickly, the alumni group is exactly what?
Oh, it's just a kind of like a fellowship of people who have the common bond that they went to Retreat. And so we just like to kind of provide value to them and celebrate them and have, you know, larger events for them and weekly meetings for them and just kind of help them provide tools for when they are out of treatment.
When's the screening? You're having a screening?
Yes.
Tell us about the movie screening.
Yeah, we're doing this is, and it's open to the community, but there's only seriously probably like 6 tickets that are left out of I think it was like 75 spots that we had. But it's the movie A Beautiful Boy with Steve Carell, which was a book. It's about his son who uses, I think, methamphetamines, mm-hmm. And kind of all about his struggle. So we're doing a private screening of that, but it's free to the community. If you're interested, you can go on my Facebook page, Maggie Hunt-Alumni, and see the link and sign up.
And try to get those last 6 tickets. I saw the movie.
Yeah.
I saw it about a month ago, and it's terrific. It's and I won't review it here, but I would guess 3/4 of it. It struck me as a little, well, it's another Hollywood movie about this problem. And then the last quarter of it, it becomes a very real and I think great portrayal of this. It's a terrific movie, well worth people's time. So that's the kind of stuff the alumni group does, and Maggie's responsible for it. Together, you guys have almost 15 years of sobriety. Maggie will have an anniversary this summer that'll make 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Grace, you're looking at 5, 4 and change.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. So you're veterans. I mean, as far as these things go, that's successful long-term sobriety. Tell us, if you will, what it was like for you at the holidays when you were still using. What was it like for you, Maggie?
Oh, man. Well, when I think about what it was like at the end of the road, like my last Christmas that I was using, like it was really just about like, whose cash I could steal from their purse, how I could like you buy drugs with the gift cards that were given to me from my family because they were not giving me any cash at all. And it was a struggle. Plus, I had also been to treatment a bunch of times, so I was trying to drink and have people still think I was sober. It was just like a nightmare. Full-time job. It just embarrassing. People were judging me. It was
how
so
many
bad.
How many holiday seasons did you have that were like that? Do you remember?
Well, I would say 18, 19, 20, and that's it probably.
Grace, for you, those holidays were, first of all, did you go to holiday festivities in your family when you were using and they didn't know you were using?
Never. I went to many that were I was using, but they always knew I was using. I mean, I don't hide it well. I'm like immediately 80 pounds looking like I just came off the street, you know, and that's kind of how I am. So my family always knew towards the end. I was uninvited to many family events and was offended by that and couldn't believe that they uninvited me to events because I was just a nasty person.
What? Yeah. And when how did you react to the slight I'm guessing you just went out and got higher, right?
I would definitely get high, but I would let everybody in my family know about everything that was wrong with them and in very unkind way before I went to go get high.
So when you guys were in active addiction and struggling, how did you psychologically, how did you view the pending holidays? I mean, was it an opportunity for you or was it filled with dread? Did it increase your bad behavior? What was it like watching? I know what it's like for me watching the holidays come. It's tough. How was it for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for myself, I always lived in this fantasy world that wasn't real. Okay, so the holidays will come up and I would be like, I'm going to get this person this gift and I'm going to get this person this gift. And maybe I did get it for them. But by the time Christmas came, I had already taken it back because it was not going to be like I needed that money. You know, like I had the good ideas and good intentions at the time. But most of the time it was just that. And I did love seeing my family, so I was kind of excited to see my family. Mostly just like a pipe dream.
Were you uninvited to any gatherings or did you manage to make it to everyone?
No, I think I managed to make it to everyone, but only because I was a yes man. Like I would just tell people whatever they wanted to hear. So they might not have thought I was sober. I came to everyone.
Do you both have siblings?
Yeah.
Yep.
How did they react to you? Were they harder than your folks or easier on you or what was it like?
They were hard on me for sure. My sister, I would say not quite as much. But my brother, him being hard on me came from him being hurt that I could never stay sober. And I made a fool out of myself and other people at family events. So, they were definitely very hard on me. And I will tell you that up until about 3 years sober, my brother and I didn't speak very much at all. So that relationship has been mending over the past year and a half,
yeah.
But it was very difficult for the first few years.
That's another characteristic I seem to see, and that siblings are angrier because they take it not so much personally. I think some of it has to do with, look what you're doing to mom and dad. Mm-hmm. Why in the right?
Yeah, well, and for my brother, at least my younger brother, he did everything right and got no attention, and I did everything wrong and had all of my parents'
attention.
And
he resented the heck out of it.
And at critical times growing up, he should have, you know, we should have been celebrating him and not paying for a rehab for me.
Mm-hmm. When you say you're still on the mend with your brother, when someone is in recovery, they have to have a kind of realistic attitude about that. I mean, I could see where you might get frustrated. Come on, I've been sober 5 years now. Give me a break. You have to be a little more realistic about that, right?
Yeah, and you also have to realize that because I would see people around me and their family members and their siblings were welcoming them back with open arms, and I would be frustrated because that's not what was happening with, you know, me. But you have to understand that the level of hurt for each person is different. So just because somebody else's family accepted them back right away doesn't mean yours will. And you did a lot of hurt that takes a lot of time to heal. So you do have to be very understanding, just like they need to be understanding, or you want them to be understanding of your sobriety. You need to be understanding of their hurt and their process.
It's why people recommend, strongly recommend, that the family get counseling as well, so that they don't go under, and they can then become real partners in the whole recovery process. So, what happens now? You know, you got a lot of years under your belt of successful sobriety. At what point, if ever, do you feel like, okay, I'm not the black sheep of the family anymore. I'm somebody who had a problem. I no longer have a problem. And now I'm just part of the family at the holidays. Are you enjoying that now, Maggie? That attitude?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that now I have successfully been sober for longer than I used. So, I mean, I'm totally vocal about like being in recovery and all of that. So I don't feel like I'm the black sheep in my family anymore. I mean, you know, like I've done a lot of things with my life since I've been sober, so I definitely don't feel that way anymore. But I also don't feel immune to it either. So I know that, like, as you know, because I'm grateful and because like I try to put that into action, I still like go to meetings. I still like help other people. I still try to be the best version of myself.
Yeah, and Grace, it's people should be aware of this, families in particular, but certainly people in early recovery, that the goal is to at some point not define yourself solely as someone who had a substance problem, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Absolutely. And, you know, I agree with Maggie that things have gotten much easier over the years. And I will also say that even if there is family members that don't come around or, you know, whatever, I think the main part about staying sober for a certain period of time and things getting better is how you feel about it. So somebody can say something to me that's maybe like a jab. And for me, I can like laugh it off now. You know, so it's how you change and how you evolve. And like Maggie said, staying in service and, you know, just growing and being a better person. It won't really matter what's going on around you, mm-hmm. as much as like what is going on with yourself.
It's important to remember and to remind people in recovery that it gets easier. It does get easier if you keep on the path. Grace Schober and Maggie Hunt with us here on Recovery Radio. We have another segment. Don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano with you. I hope you're finding us here on Saturdays talking about the disease of addiction. We've been at it on Recovery Radio now for a bunch of years. I think it's over five now for sure. And to be perfectly honest with you, this program is probably of greater benefit to people who have family members who are in either active use or in recovery. And if you're hearing this and the disease of addiction has not affected your family, good for you. You've been blessed. But if you know somebody who is struggling or you think they're struggling, let them know we're here because we talk about this and have been for many, many years now. From Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, the sponsors of the program, two of their people, Maggie Hunt, Director of Alumni Services, and her colleague, Grace Schober, who is an intake coordinator for Retreat. Navigating the holidays, you guys have been you know, great. That's why we asked you to do the show. We knew you'd know this material. We also know you know the material because I see you three times a week on television shows all over the Delaware Valley and now in Lancaster County. You were on NBC in Philadelphia early in the week, both of you, right?
ABC
early in the week. Yeah. During the breaks here, they are sitting field. Listen, they're fielding offers from people who want them. Do they all want to talk about this topic?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Well, as Maggie made the point of earlier, that it's widely understood to be a very stressful time of the year for people in early recovery. So we hope you've heard a few things today that might you know help you get through this period of time. And as we said during the last break, we want to get you to the point where, you know, they're just the holidays. That's your goal is it's just the holidays and we're going to have a good time, only we're going to be sober doing it. Maggie, let's just recap for people because I think the thing I take away from this most importantly is that no matter what you're doing trying to get sober, approaching these holidays have to be a mindful experience. and well thought out plan. You can't just fly into Christmas or the holidays and think there's not going to be problems. So if we could leave people with a couple of ideas to keep in mind, that would be helpful. What would you suggest are a couple of things people ought to really think about?
Yeah, I mean, you said it right, like strategic. Be strategic about where you're going to go and who you're going to see, and you know, role play situations that you potentially could be in. Like if you know somebody is actively using or they affect your mental health or really upset you, you know, maybe try to avoid that situation if possible. And the other one I think is just because I think that people should be proud of their sobriety. Be proud, be happy that you are sober today and that you can even be present for your family, that you can show up. The more that you identify yourself as being a person in long-term recovery, the more that you will feel that way. It's kind of like when I say a certain, you know, I forget what the slogan is or whatever, but if I think this way, I'm going to be this way,
yep,
kind of thing.
Yep, yep. It's a perfectly appropriate time of the year to celebrate something like your sobriety. It's not just about, oh, I got a sweater for Christmas. Grace, what would you advise people to have in mind?
Yeah, I think we touched on it, but I think something to really remember is to have a list of 5 to 10 sober people that you can call if you're struggling. So they can give you suggestions, they can give you a timeout, they can talk to you about what's going on and how to get through it. Another thing would be before you go anywhere, before you go home, before you go to any type of work event or in a different area, find an AA or an NA meeting in that area that you're able to attend, because they are all over, especially for the holidays. They have special meetings for the holidays. So don't think that there won't be any around just because it's, you know, Christmas or, you know, any other holiday in particular. And have new traditions. Have new traditions with your friends, with your family, things maybe you didn't do before that could be fun, can be exciting, and definitely know that things will get better. It's just like, you know, a cut, you put a Band-Aid on it, it's there, it's fresh. But once you take the Band-Aid off, it's healing, but there is still a scar. So you always want to be mindful for what you're doing, but it still is getting better as time goes on.
Yeah, the scar metaphor is perfect because it's a good reminder that behavior, the old behavior led to the scar, and you don't want to go back down that road again. Listen, guys, thank you so much. I mean, you're great. I knew you would be. But I forgot to ask. I should ask you this right now. Did either of you ever celebrate the holidays in treatment?
I did, yes.
And
it was not good for me, just because I was still in that same mind frame. You know, I had my parents come with my children to visit me in a treatment center. They didn't get me the present I wanted. I flipped out. It was not good. It wasn't good. I was feeling very entitled. But really, it was just because I was sad that I couldn't be home with my family. But it was a really, really good decision to make. It's like a deterrent to go to treatment over the holidays because they'll be away. But it's better to be away for one holiday than all of them.
Absolutely. So anybody listening who might be in treatment, in recovery, or in treatment right now and wants to feel sorry for themselves because they got to spend Christmas in a facility, that's where you should be. Mm-hmm. You should be there, and don't use it as another excuse to not keep working the programs. So anyway, happy holidays, ladies.
Yeah, you
Thank
well.
You so much. I'll look for you on television somewhere real soon. Maggie Hunt and Grace Schober from Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. We are going to do, I think, another program which will deal more specifically with stress during the holidays in a couple of weeks. But so I'll see you before then. I won't be wishing everybody happy holidays just yet. We'll save that for a couple of weeks. Recovery Radio. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next Saturday. Bye-bye.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.